It's Mike McEntee, and congratulations, you have survived another week of the Trump administration. That's our celebratory music. You made it through. It is Friday. You have survived another week. You're a week closer to the Super Bowl, which is promising to be a super mess for traffic downtown. I was reading here, it's 45 minutes to go 8 blocks. That's what some of the buses were facing on Wednesday, and Thursday it wasn't much better, and it's likely to keep up that way until they play the big game a week from this Sunday. I don't know if I'm planning to go downtown. I don't know if you are. But it is, this is what we get. This is what we've been waiting for. Yes, all that stuff coming at us and just kind of landing in Minnesota. In the news today, a big setback for those trying to protect the Boundary Waters Canoe Area from potentially environmentally harmful sulfide ore mining. We're going to get the details on the action and the reaction a little bit later on the show. And as you probably know, we have a wide open race for Minnesota's first congressional seat since Tim Walz is running for governor instead of re-election. It's being rated as a toss-up. So who has the momentum? And will the seat change from Democratic control to Republican? We're going to talk with Rochester Post Bulletin political reporter Heather Carlson's been following the race. But first, it's been a very busy week in Washington, D.C., even with Donald Trump leaving town and heading off to Switzerland. Joining us to talk about what's going on is Bob Ney. He's a former congressman from Ohio and political analyst for Talk Media News. Bob, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Mike. My pleasure.
Good to have you on here. Hey, let's start with the breaking news. Even though Donald Trump has headed over to Switzerland, he continues to say thing and it continues to make news. There's a report here today that Trump wanted to fire Mueller, the special counselor on the whole Russian investigation, and he's already dismissing this as fake news.
Well, you know, we've been following this, you know, with Talk Media News Service. And I could take my analysis from 4 weeks and 5 weeks ago and just keep replaying it every week, Mike, because, you know, first he says, I'll sit with Mueller, and then I won't, and I will, and I won't. And now the reports, you know, leaked out that he would fire him and Don McGahn, his counsel, threatened to quit. Look, I think we all know that the president gets angry and says things, so it's not, you know, out of the realm that he said, you know, I'm going to fire him, maybe not once, maybe twice, maybe three times. So, I mean, I think it's an accurate story, and I don't, you know why he just doesn't say, yeah, I got angry about the fact that, you know, agents were sending texts back and forth, you know, whatever. So, I mean, I think they can deny it, but I think we all kind of feel that it's an accurate story.
Well, his lawyers just have to be going crazy about this stuff that Trump, I mean, not only what he says publicly, but then what leaks out about what he said. All of this stuff put together makes a case that he is trying to obstruct justice.
Well, you hit a really good point because I myself went through a legal quagmire and I wanted to talk about things, you know, because you want to. And I had friends in radio, and my lawyers would sit down and say, you won't. If you do, we quit, you know, and because they have to look at the legal side. Now, if you look at President Trump and the way he operates, you know, that goes on steroids. I mean, there's no question that the lawyers, in fact, no lawyer would sit there and just say, yes, go ahead and say what you want to say or all the things he said. They have to have internal struggles there in the White House. And the problem, and you hit the nail on the head, that the president has, if there's nothing where directly he fixed something with, you know, Putin or Russia, well, there's an issue of obstruction of justice of an investigation. And he just really shouldn't be commenting at all. So, you know, I think that he's put himself into, not so good a position, and I'm sure his lawyers are not happy.
I mean, the reasons that were given that he might fire Mueller sounded like in your typical, you know, political research. Hey, let's find out everything bad about somebody that we possibly can, and we've got it here so we can kind of just use it against him. But none of it was a fireable offense, really. And I think Trump just saw that and doesn't know the distinction, at least politically, between what is dirt and what is something that you can fire somebody for.
Well, correct, because look, let's say, you know, some texts were sent back and forth. Now, I don't think anybody really believes there was a secret society within the FBI. But look, some agents might not have liked Trump. Some agents might not have liked Hillary Clinton. All right? It's human nature. But the fact that a couple of agents or one agent, texted his mistress, that doesn't mean that Mueller ordered him to do that, or that Mueller approved of anything, or that it happened under Mueller's jurisdiction. So as angry as the president may be, that doesn't mean it's an offense that he can fire him. I mean, look, he ought to let the chips fall where they may, and to attempt to fire him, you know, and I know, and everybody listening knows, would create a huge, huge issue, much more than he has now, and a constitutional crisis situation with everybody going off the wall with it.
I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked that earlier this week, say, well, why don't you just go ahead if this is all so bad? And she just said, well, you guys will jump all over me. And, you know, it's pretty obvious what that would happen, what would do if that would happen.
Of course.
Donald Trump dismissed all this, of course, today as fake news. He's been using that that phrase as he's been over in Davos, Switzerland, talking to the World Economic Forum. And today he was acting as kind of the big salesperson for American business there. Mm-hmm. He gave a big speech. Mm-hmm. Did you get to see that?
I saw parts of it. And I saw, you know, his arrival, of course, in Davos. But also, a lot of people, I don't think, are aware that this is the first time an American president has been there in 17 years. President Clinton was the last president to go, so he is going to get some attention. And, of course, the president of France has invited him and kind of serving as his protectorate, actually, over there in Davos, you know, to try to make things go decently.
You know, I don't remember a president, at least a sitting president, addressing the forum. I know we've had, I think, as you mentioned, Clinton was there, but I don't think a president has addressed the forum before. So this was kind of very, very different today.
Well, yes. And again, it's been 17 years since the president's attended. President Bush did not attend his entire two terms, and neither did President Obama. So there is a certain amount of, you know, acceptance, because they do want an American president there. They've asked for presidents to come in the past. And again, president of France was kind of, you know, a big deal now, because he did get the American president over. Whether it had been Hillary Clinton, you know, or Bernie Sanders won, whoever won, they would like a president to come over after all of these years. So he's going to get a certain amount of, you know, breaks for that. And you did notice, I'm sure, he kind of tempered the America First, in a sense. You know, America's open for business, and we're not in this alone. And he would, you know, like some changes in the trade bill, but obviously he didn't use campaign language over there.
And I don't know how much he meant it, though. That's the thing, because he stuck to the script, and the script is what, you know, his White House aides are writing for him, and this has been laundered and readied for him. Mm-hmm. But he didn't go off script, which is what he usually, you know, is what you usually get when he's telling you what he really thinks. So my question is, yeah, this was tempered, but do people understand that this is him speaking very, very carefully, and what he really thinks may not be what he's saying?
Well, you know, I'm sure, because, I mean, look, everybody by now, after an election year and then 1 year in the presidency, kind of knows the style here and knows the game. You know, what you see one day is what you may not see the next, or you might see that pop up the third day. So, you know, I think these are seasoned world leaders, so I'm sure that, yeah, they're listening and things, but I think the whole attempt was to get him to soften a bit. Now the question is, what will he do, you know, when he returns home? And I'm sure they're wondering that in their minds.
You know, Trump did one of these. They always have these, you know, side meetings between different countries. He was doing a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I think he was doing one with the president of the Swiss Federation. And during that, he just suddenly blurted out something. I want to play for you and get your reaction. He was talking, like he often does, he was talking about the stock market, but he made some very interesting comments. Listen to this.
But the stock market is up almost 50%. And I will say this with great conviction, that had the opposing party won, in my opinion, because they would have added additional regulation to already the tremendous regulations we have, I believe the markets would have been down anywhere from 25 to 50% instead of being up almost 50%.
Now, the stock market hasn't been up quite 50%. It's up 42%.
Right.
That is still quite a bit. Mm. But, you know, does the president really have that much effect on the stock market, you think, here?
Well, I mean, they have some effect. If presidents, now they do have a pretty direct effect if they say some really negative things that cause the market to go down. That can happen. I've seen it in the past with, you know, certain dealings or with Fannie Freddie got into trouble, the, you know, the mortgage giants, and people made statements and the market would drop a little bit. But, you know, presidents will tend to take credit for, you know, market fluctuations. But, you know, no one can predict what would have happened because if the Democratic side had taken control, because look, there are times under President Obama when the stock market rose, right? And
oh, yeah.
Of course, he took over with a bad economy. So that's just kind of a political statement. I kind of marvel after all these years I've been in politics, you know, you kind of let your opponent go and you make your own path. And I just don't know why he feels, you know, he could take credit if he wants, but why go back and try to drag the, quote, opposition into it? You know, it dilutes what he's trying to say, really.
Well, I mean, he continues to carry around maps showing his, you know, huge victory that, again, people remind him he didn't win the popular vote. That doesn't mean he's not the president. But, you know, I think he feels like he's still trying to justify being president. And that's why he keeps bringing that up all the time.
Mm-hmm. It's like he's in campaign mode, you know. And the bottom line is that he took some states that normally he wouldn't have taken. And ironically, it was all dealing with trade. And the other irony to me in looking at all of this is, you know, President Bush and President Obama didn't go to Davos. And here comes the person who is, you know, is more like the Bernie Sanders type of view in the campaign, you know, President Trump was, of trade. Yet he's over there with the globalists. So, you know, he can say certain things, but there's certain action that people are going to want to see in those states that he was able to win. They can turn very, very quickly against him the next time.
You know, it's a real question of whether, you know, when he says the stock market is up, whether really the people in those states are feeling the impact. Because I don't think a stock market going up like it has always means a better standard of living for most Americans, especially those who are, you know, perhaps at the bottom rungs of the economic ladder, hoping to get back into the middle class and don't have a big 401k.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you make an excellent point, because doesn't it kind of get you? I know it does me when I would hear, well, you know, big oil is down on the stock market. This is not good for people. You know, oil prices are down. Well, I think that's kind of good for people myself. I kind of enjoy filling my tank up when it's cheaper, you know, but because it's a good point. Just because, you know, certain stocks don't do good, or because they do good, that doesn't mean that the people's quality of life is better. A lot of people aren't invested in the market, and you know, they're fighting inflation and high student rates and things. So I think your point's well taken.
I mean, it does help you go, oh, maybe it helps people's attitude about things and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when it gets down to paying the bills at the end of the month, having a huge stock market increase for, you know, a family of four living in southern Minnesota, working, you know, down at the packing plant, that doesn't mean a lot of things. It really doesn't.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, when Donald Trump gets back here, there's still going to be a lot waiting for him. And the big thing, of course, is the whole immigration, DACA thing. What is likely to happen with that next week? Do we have any idea?
Well, you know, I do have a bit of an idea in the sense that, look, there's three components to it. There's DACA, which the president's offering actually some more people, you know, to be coming into the system. Then there's the part of the chain migration, which he doesn't like, but the Democratic side is going to insist on having a chain migration where, you know, you can bring a brother, a sister, et cetera, over. And then the third part is the wall, quote, which could be, we could pay for it, it could be electronic, whatever. He's going to call it a wall. I mean, that's the, quote, border security, which, you know, the Democratic side has supported some border security, too, but he's, again, going to call it a wall. But I think that he wants a bill. And, you know, he's kind of putting, again, the Republicans in the House and Senate in a bind. They all keep saying, oh, we'd like DACA, but they don't bring it up for a vote, right? Because it will pass. So the president is going to have to give on, and I know he's insistent on chain migration, but he's going to have to give on that. And then, honestly, Mike, I imagine whatever comes out with border security, which you have to have border security somewhere in the bill, he is going to call a wall some one way or another. So there are some avenues, I think, for DACA to be taken care of. I really do.
So we might, I mean, he has suggested that 12 years, you know, it sounds like an arbitrary term, that the people who are under DACA and who also might be eligible for it, so you're talking about millions of people, might be able to get to some sort of version or at least get to citizenship here in the United States. I think a lot of people agree with that, but it's a question of what has to be given up to do that. And I think there's a certain part of the base that says that you can't do those types of things. It's ridiculous to spend that amount of money on a wall because it's not going to do anything.
Right. Well, like I said, I think he's going to call any amount of money in there a wall. That's what I think he's going to do, even if it's not a wall, you know?
Okay. We're speaking. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just, you know, I've told friends of mine, I don't care if there isn't a wall in there. He's going to call it a wall. It's not going to be a wall, but he's going to call it a wall.
All right. We're speaking with Bob Ney. He's a former congressman from Ohio and a political analyst for Talk Media News. Got one more topic here I want to hit with you, Bob.
Yeah.
This has been interesting. There's a report out that a lot of State Department employees are saying they're being shunted to the side and being forced to work kind of in the area of misfit toys, you know, Freedom of Information Act type stuff, because they were working on initiatives that Trump didn't like. They were working on them during the Obama administration. What's going on here?
Well, yes, there's a lot of cases we can use, but Ian Moss is a former Marine. He joined the State Department during President Obama's administration. He's got a law degree, a prestigious Presidential Management Fellows Program, and we could go on and on, but I'm singling him out because, you know, he's doing Freedom of Information requests, and they're having people of fairly high caliber doing Freedom of Information requests. Now, I know those are up because, you know, Judicial Watch with Hillary Clinton was asking for, you know, thousands of them, and people do continue to ask for these. But having said that, and any new requests, you know, on Trump or whatever, they could have people, and it's a noble cause to give the freedom of information. I understand that, but frankly, they could have people that are kind of entry level to do that. So I think what they're doing is kind of taking some history out of agencies. Maybe some people were working on, for example, the Iran deal, right? And now they don't like that, and so they've moved them from those entities within state and putting them doing Freedom of Information Act. It's a way to kind of remove some history out of key positions without firing them, frankly. And let's face it, if you're very, very talented and you're sitting there looking up trivial, you know, requests, maybe they think you'll quit.
I mean, this just seems like it's with the Republicans, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, government is bad if indeed you start getting rid of the good people in it. I mean, it's just, you know, this seems just another move to make government operate badly so you can justify that, hey, we shouldn't fund it.
Yes, and you know, Mike, one thing about state, and I found this when I was in Congress, I was under two presidents, you know, Clinton and Bush, and honestly, most of the state operates without a lot of politics anyway. It really does. Mm-hmm. These are career people, you know? And now they're turning on them, honestly, for no reason.
Yeah, it is. It's a sad thing, and it's a waste of resources. It really is. Hey, Bob, sure. We have to run, but I appreciate you talking with us. Bob Ney is a former congressman from Ohio, political analyst for Talk Media News. He's joined us from Washington, D.C. today. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you.
Hey, folks, we're going to take a break, and when we get back, I want to talk about the Trump administration's seeming obsession with destroying everything Obama did, because now it's taking aim at the Minnesota Boundary Water Canoe Area. We'll get that story coming up next.
The Electric Fetus wants your used records. The used vinyl buying bonanza is going on now at The Electric Fetus. Sell your vinyl from now through January 31st and receive an extra 50% based on the quote if you choose store credit. That's 50% more to use on more music or even the gift department. There's no better time to bring in your used LPs. Find The Electric Fetus just south of downtown Minneapolis at 2000 4th Avenue South. Open 9 to 9 weekdays, 9 to 8 Saturday, and 11 to 6 on Sunday.
Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is a perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy Center event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates available, located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
Reimagine a world without violence. On Saturday, January 27th, you're invited to participate in this day-long conference sponsored by Plymouth Congregational Church and the Reimagining Community. Opening and closing services will be led by musician Sarah Thompson. Workshop sessions will focus on immigration, the violence of racism, and how to begin dismantling white supremacy, the LGBTQ community and the violence they live with every day, facing trauma, the police community relationship, using art to help us reimagine nonviolent communication practices within families, and much more. This is the 25th anniversary of the original Reimagining Conference. Come join with others in exploring nonviolence, peace, and healing, with attention to the individual, family, and community. Again, this day-long conference takes place Saturday, January 27th at Plymouth Congregational Church in downtown Minneapolis. Online registration is open until January 23rd, with early bird registration available through January 15th. Find a full schedule of events and register online at reimaginingcommunity.org. Let's reimagine a world without violence together.
Hey, welcome back to the Mike Matthews Show here on AM 950. Sam just gave us a call here, 952-946-6205. He had a comment about the DACA that we were talking about. Hey, Sam, you got some thoughts here you want to share with us?
Yeah. What I wanted to say was giving DACA to 1% of the undocumented population in the United States is wrong. They should do it for all of them or none of them. And and I say this because you are now pushing the, you know, if it's 20 million that are here illegally, it doesn't matter how they got here or when they got here, but you're taking 1% out of that, making them legal, pushing the other 99% back into the shadows. It's just this cycle of hopelessness. And people say, oh, well, they shouldn't have broken the law and come here illegally. Well, then America shouldn't have foreign adventurism and intervening in these people's countries, causing them to be impoverished. I mean, do people ever think of that? How much involvement does the United States have in Southern America? Toppling their governments, their democratically elected governments, because we don't like who's in power, or other parts of the world. I mean, if you look at the defense spending that we do, it's a lot of black money. So either, you know, legalize all of them or none of them. That's how it should be done, because you're creating basically classes of citizens. And that's not what America's about.
Here's a question for you, because, I mean, in an ideal world, I'd say solve it the way you're talking about it. But we're dealing with the world we're in right now. If you could get part of the, you know, part of the solution, do you go for that and hope you get more of it later? Or are you just saying you got to stand firm and you get all or nothing?
Well, step back for a minute and look at where we are at right now. So I construct a sentence that way. We got here by doing that, by kicking the can down the road, by only doing a patch solution, a Band-Aid solution on top of a Band-Aid solution. What is this? I mean, we can't go on like this forever. So what these politicians are proposing is another Band-Aid solution. You know, get the voters happy or whatever so that they can go out and carry out their business. No, that's not what America is about. The government is just way too big right now, and this is hopeless. I mean, I don't agree with this, and I'm just left speechless.
Okay. Well, hey, Santa, I appreciate your passion about the issue, because that's what solves the problem, is people caring about something. And I also appreciate the phone call here today. Thank you so much. I wanted to give you this breaking story I mentioned off the top of the show today. The Trump administration is clearing a path that could bring environmentally dangerous sulfide ore mining to lands near Minnesota's pristine Boundary Waters Canoe area. The U.S. Forest Service today announced that it is terminating the environmental impact statement process that has been underway for the past year up there. The Obama administration ordered a comprehensive study a year ago as part of a broader effort to block proposed nickel mining operations. Now, instead of that study, the U.S. Forest Service said today it would conduct a more modest review called an environmental assessment. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton blasted that decision today. He said, quote, "It's terrible that the Trump administration is putting the financial interests of the Chilean mining conglomerate Antofagasta ahead of protecting the Boundary Waters Canoe area for generations of Minnesotans and other Americans." Dayton said the Trump administration, is downgrading its analysis of the impact of copper nickel mining on the BWC watershed and shamefully exempting from that review Antofagasta's proposed underground mine directly adjacent to the iconic wilderness area. Other environmental groups are upset as well. The Campaign to Save the Boundary Waters spokesperson, Doug Niemela, said there's no room for shortcuts when it comes to the Boundary Waters. He says all Americans, no matter how they feel about this issue, deserve the most thorough and rigorous analysis possible to determine the risks of sulfide ore copper mining near the Boundary Waters. Let's see the breaking news that's going on with that. Also today, A state review of government agencies released Friday today found 266 complaints of sexual harassment over the last 6 years here in Minnesota, and revealed that the state paid out $709,000 in settlement for 7 sexual harassment cases since 2015. And I should, clarify that that's in our government, not just in general, but in the government. Minnesota Management and Budget released a report today that recommends numerous changes on how the states handle sexual harassment. Recommendations including creating an incident officer to receive reports, investigate, and enforce government policies. You got to remember that allegations of sexual misconduct prompted 2 legislators to resign. We have special elections coming up on that to fill Representative Tony Cornish's seat. He's the Republican, and Senator Dan Schoen's seat. He's the DFLer. That's going to be held next month. The legislature is also expected to look into policy changes during the upcoming session. In fact, on Monday, a bipartisan group of lawmakers and community leaders will hold a press conference to unveil legislation aimed at preventing sexual exploitation in Minnesota. And you can watch that news conference live on theuptake.org starting at 1:30 p.m. on Monday. Well, coming up next on the show, will Republicans flip CD1 from Democratic, where Tim Walz has been holding the seat for several cycles, to Republican? It's a wide open race. We'll talk about that next after we hear Art B.
This is Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, and we have some free art gigs coming up that you won't want to miss. Red Eye Theater, Playwright Center, and Hopkin Art Center are all having some cool offerings for you to see. Red Eye Theater is a multidisciplinary creative laboratory that supports the development and production of pioneering performance work. Innovative, experimental, spirited, distinctive, startling, daring, and out of the ordinary, Red Eye is passionate champion of new work on stage. In addition to creating their own acclaimed multimedia theatrical productions, Red Eye functions as an incubator and producer of other artists' works. Described as the most fearless presenters in town, co-founders Steve Busa and Miriam Must have opened Red Eye's doors over the years to nearly 200 projects involving creative efforts of more than 1,000 artists. Red Eye has been celebrating the messy process of discovery since 1983. Red Eye supplies audiences and artists with opportunities to get up close and personal with the thrills and challenges involved in developing new work. Quick plus dirty Hashtag One is a free show on January 29th. This is a new experimental performance series curated by Sam Johnson and Kristen Van Loon. Quick plus Dirty Hashtag One performs this Monday at the Red Eye, located at 15 West 14th Street, Minneapolis. The show starts at 7:29 sharp. The doors open at 7:10. For more information, go to theredeyetheater.org. Another free performance to get on your radar will be at the Playwright Center on both Monday, February 5th and 6th at 7 o'clock. 3/4 inches of Sky will be a play reading. This play is written by Playwright Center core writer Sherry Kramer. The play is a meditation about memory, how we make it, how it makes us. It's also in conversation with our new technologically mediated selves. We are filled with vivid, tender, heartbreaking, exciting memories that aren't actually ours, but look and feel like they are. It's changed the way we dream. It's changed the way our dreams shape us, and it's changed the world. The Playwright Center was founded in 1971 by 5 writers seeking artistic and professional support. The Playwright Center today serves more playwrights in more ways than any other organization in the country. One of the nation's most generous and well-respected theater organizations, the Playwright Center focuses on both supporting playwrights and promoting new plays at theaters around the country. The center has helped launch the careers of numerous nationally recognized artists, notably August Wilson, Lee Blessing, Jeffrey Hatcher, and Kira Obolinski. For more information on the Playwright Center and their play readings, go to pwcenter.org. At Hopkins Center for the Arts, take advantage of the free admission to view the exhibit of Russ White's Loose Change. Playing off the idea of loose change, this series of colored pencil busts showcases not presidents or dignitaries, but everyday people of different ages, races, genders, sizes, and abilities. Drawn photorealistically, but in a variety of wildly vibrant color palettes, these pieces use a warts and all approach to find the beauty not only of the individual, but when viewed together in our shared humanity as well. The pieces demand empathy from the viewer as the slightly larger than life people stare back at us. To view some of the cool pieces, go online to hopkinsartcenter.com and click on exhibitions. The Loose Change exhibit runs through February 11th. Hopkins Center for the Arts is located on Main Street in Hopkins and is open to the public. That's Art Beat for the Week. I'm Lori Fitz from Connections Radio Show, airing live Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. here on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. 6 unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the 6 locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells.
Experience the difference. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin.
Must be 21 or over to play.
Chocolat Celeste is a true celebration. This is Colette, and we've created 2 themed chocolate collections for this year's football playoffs. These chocolates are the world's finest artisan chocolates with distinct, unforgettable flavors that will sweeten your team's victory and soften the sting of defeat. Having a party? Skol! Check out our football-themed chocolates. We're an approved vendor through the NFL Business Connect program. Call 651-644-3823 or visit chocolatceleste.com.
With your AM 950 weather, this is Eric Nelson. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low around 26. Saturday will be mostly sunny with a high near 32. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low around 11. Sunday will be partly sunny with a high near 18. And Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low around 3. Eat Local Minnesota's restaurant of the week is Burger Moe's. Located in downtown St. Paul, Burger Moe's is the perfect neighborhood gathering spot before or after XL Energy events. Offering 2 happy hours and more than 60 beers on tap. Check out Burger Moe's at 242 West 7th Street, St. Paul. Full menu at burgermoes.com.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950. The race to replace Congressman Tim Walz is a wide-open scramble. There are many candidates on the DFL side running, and there will be a primary. On the Republican side, they're trying to prevent yet another loss in a district they used to dominate. One of my Capitol Press colleagues, Rochester Post Bulletin Politics reporter Heather Carlson, has been following the race, including a DFL candidates forum that was held this week, and she joins us now. Heather, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Glad to have you on here. You are one of the few folks that are down there covering the politics in the 1st Congressional District, so it's great for us up here in the Twin Cities to hear what's going on. We don't always get that. This has been a race that the National Republican Congressional Committee has targeted. It gets rated as a toss-up by several of the services that do these types of things. How does it compare to other campaigns that you've been covering down there?
I would have to say this is probably the most exciting close race I've covered. Now, I wasn't a political reporter back in 06 when Tim Walz pulled off his major upset over Gil Gutnick, so I wasn't here for that. But right now, it's wide open. We're expecting millions to be flooding in for this race down here.
So who do we have running? I guess the big crowd is on the DFL side. Let's start over there. Who is running in this race?
Okay, we've got 7 candidates over here. We've got, I would say right now, sort of maybe viewed as the front runner, just because he's been able to raise a lot of money. He's built up a lot of organization. Down here is Dan Feehan. He's an Iraq war vet, served in Obama's Department of Defense. But we've got a lot of other candidates here. We've got, Mankato attorney Joe Sullivan, Rochester attorney Rich Wright, former state senator Vicki Jensen, and then we have some other folks too. Retired Winona professor Bob Rees, Albert Lee businessman Colin Meinhardt, and a Rochester web developer, Johnny Axum.
Yeah, and I think Johnny Axum has, we've had him on the show before. He's got a background, I think, as a comedian, but he said he's going to run in the primary, so we're guaranteed a primary in this race right now. So given that we have so many candidates, you had to go to your notes to remember them all. Are any of these folks, besides Dan Feehan, getting much traction with people? I mean, who's going to show up and make these decisions? It's going to be just a handful of people, isn't it?
Right. We've got the caucuses coming up here on the 6th of February. You know, I've been talking to some DFL organizers in the area, trying to get a sense who's out there, you know, who's got the organization, who's contacting potential delegates. A couple other names are floating to the top. I'm really seeing 4 candidates. We've got Feehan, and then I would say the other candidates, and I'm hearing have some pretty good organization right now, are Joe Sullivan, Rich Wright, and then Vicki Jensen, the former senator from Owatonna. She struggled a little bit in the fundraising department, but she's also been really out there trying to meet one-on-one with folks. She held her own at the forum on Wednesday, so I'm going to put her in the mix there too.
Okay. I want to come back and talk about that forum, but I also want to talk about who we have running on the Republican side, because one name that everybody's heard before is Jim Hagedorn. He's the guy who's run the last couple of times and lost to Tim Walz, but there's also another candidate in the race. Tell me about that competition.
Right. Well, competing with Jim for the endorsement this year is Rochester Senator Carla Nelson. So she jumped into the race in October, and she posted a pretty big fundraising number for her first quarter, $218,000. So we've got these two battling here for the GOP endorsement.
Now, I've covered the debates between Hagedorn and Walz, and Hagedorn was, you know, he made some statements, I guess, that you'd call very very Trump-like on immigration and some other things, and he came very close to winning last time, but he didn't in an election where Trump was getting a lot of support. Is there a feeling, I mean, amongst the Republican Party that they have to run somebody else than Hagedorn to win this time, and that's why Carla Nelson's in the race?
I'm not necessarily sure that's it. I think there's actually, frankly, a lot of division among the Republicans. There's a little bit of mixed feeling about the senator getting into the race. There's some people that feel like, from what I've heard from Republican activists, there's some people that feel like Jim sort of deserves this shot in 18 because he's run multiple times and got so close last time. But other folks are worried that he hasn't been able to pull it over the finish line, especially in the last election where Trump won the district by 15 percentage points and still couldn't pull it off. So I don't know. The folks I'm talking to, though, feel like at this point Jim Hagedorn has built up he's worked really hard to get support among all the county leadership organizations, and that Senator Nelson is probably facing an uphill climb to get the endorsement. But she is not ruled out running in a primary either. So
now, Senator Nelson's situation does have some other political connections here, some other political strings, because of the Republicans controlling the Minnesota Senate here by a very slim margin. If she were to go on and win this election, are there some who are concerned that that might open up for her seat to be taken over by the Democrats?
Absolutely. And the Senate district that she represents, which includes southern part of the city of Rochester and then the rural area here, it's seen as one that could go either way. It could totally flip. And you're right, depending on a lot of things happening up there, there's the potential that this seat theoretically could determine control of the Senate if she were to leave. So we've even had a Democrat already announce that he's going to run for this Senate seat in 2020. But if Senator Nelson were to win and go out to Congress, he's ready to step up in a special election. That's John Ostenson.
Wow. So, yeah, there's all sorts of, political backstories kind of going with this whole race. Now, earlier this week, Wednesday, you were at the DFL Candidates Forum over at the Rochester Library. The big topic was health care. Was there any other topic besides health care? What are these candidates talking about? What are the people who are asking the questions want to know?
There were lots of topics. In fact, I think they got asked 7 questions and then they just had to end it. We were out of time, but there was talk about immigration and the Dreamers, gun control, NAFTA. I focused on health care in my article because I felt that's where we saw some of the differences. And a lot of the issues, frankly, a lot of these candidates were on the same page. Everyone says they support the Dreamers, a path to citizenship, oppose the wall, things like that. So healthcare is where you saw a little bit of differentiation there.
So that, I mean, just what you told me there, that tells me, at least the way I read it, is whoever the Democratic candidate is and whoever the Republican candidate is, voters are likely to have a very stark choice on differences in policies, aren't they?
I would think so, absolutely. I mean, you're absolutely right. Frankly, Jim Hagedorn has made immigration a big issue in his campaign. He supports, pausing, allowing refugees to come in, et cetera. Probably on all those issues, it's going to be a pretty stark choice for voters.
Are there any wild cards in this race? Because there's no third-party candidates that we've heard of. Are there any issues that we haven't talked about that are likely to raise their head and be part of this election? Or this is pretty much straightforward how it's going to go?
That's a great question. To be honest with you, I'm not seeing a wild card right now. Doesn't mean it won't happen, as you know. But at this point, I'm not seeing that. I'm just curious if on both sides we will have a finalized endorsement selection here and get a pretty good idea of who the candidates will be in the fall early on, or if we won't really have a settled field until, after the August primary.
Yeah, the Republicans, as I mentioned off the top here, have targeted this district from their National Republican Congressional Committee. And that means that there's probably going to be spending. That means that there's probably going to be ads. And a lot of people in the Rochester area are going to be bombarded with them. Have the Democrats made that similar commitment, or have we heard yet, or is it wait and see? I mean, it seems like they're a little bit softer on defending one of the seats that they really should be holding on to if they want to make any progress in Congress.
You know, I haven't seen a huge presence from them yet. Doesn't mean that they won't. I think once we get this field narrowed down a little bit, there is a sense. I know that, for instance, Dan Feehan has been getting some support from some big Democrats in Congress, frankly, are backing his campaign. I'm trying to remember the name of that Massachusetts Representative Moulton, I think. Anyway, his PAC is backing Feehan. So I'm thinking, though, as we get a little further down the road, I really expect we're going to see some big numbers on both sides. There's too much at stake here. I mean, this is one of only a couple dozen races in the nation that are really deemed competitive, up for grabs.
So given that, and given it's an open seat, what do you think the fall campaign is going to be like here once everything is settled? Tell me what you think this is going to be like.
Well, I think what it's going to be like is that folks in Rochester are going to turn on their TVs, their radios, and they're just going to be hearing nonstop ads is what I think it's going to be like pretty much from September onward.
How about the candidates themselves? Are we going to be able to hear from them? I mean, all the people involved here, are they willing to get out there and have a debate? Because we saw Walz and Hagedorn before were always willing to sit down and debate and talk the issues multiple times. Do you think everybody that you've seen here is going to be of that like mindset, or we don't know?
I think that's an open question to see, you know, how many debates are they going to do? That's always a delicate dance, you know. But I know right now that these candidates are just crisscrossing the district, both sides of the aisle. I mean, they're going to every bean feed, fish fry, you know, working to get to know all the party activists at this point. So I guess we'll see once the stakes are raised and we've got our final candidates here.
Well, it certainly makes an interesting job for you to do for the next, what do we got here, about 10 months, 9-10 months here until the election. It's going to mean kind of nonstop coverage between that and, of course, what you're doing over at the legislature, because you're up there when the session starts on February 20th, correct?
Yes, so I'll have my hands full, but, you know, I wouldn't want it any other way. This is what makes the job so fun.
All right. Well, Heather, I appreciate you sharing with us what's going on down there because, you know, frankly, in the Twin Cities media, what's going on hasn't gotten a lot of play, and I know people are appreciative to kind of to get an insight in what's happening with the 1st Congressional District race.
Well, thanks again for having me on. It was a treat.
And thank you so much. Folks, we're going to take a break here right now on the Mike McEntee Show. But when we get back, I've got some news notes. And then we got to talk about Nutella. And I'll tell you why. That's all next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
Get ready for the 2018 Blue State Ball. Hi there, Matt McNeil encouraging you to join us for a great annual tradition for Democrats and like-minded left-leaning individuals. The Blue State Ball is set for Saturday, March 10th at the same great location we were at last year, the Blaisdell Mansion in Minneapolis. Coming back to the Twin Cities are two of the station's favorites, Tom Hartman and Norman Goldman. We'll begin the evening with a VIP event starting at 5:30 with hors d'oeuvres and drinks, and at 7 p.m. the general admission begins. With it being an election year, we are expecting a ton of special political guests, and as always, Mike McEntee, many of the great weekend hosts, and myself will be there too. Hang out with great Democrats, check out the sponsor table, and enjoy the rousing speeches taking us into the evening. VIP tickets are $100 each and are limited. General admission tickets are $35 each. Go to am950radio.com for ticket information. That's am950radio.com, Saturday, March 10th at the Blaisdell, 2322 Blaisdell Avenue in Minneapolis. It's the 2018 Blue State Ball. We'll see you there.
Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens is the first green cemetery in Minnesota. It's a beautiful, peaceful place where burials are celebrations of life with as little impact on the environment as possible. Tony Weber founded it because he wants to leave a green legacy for his grandchildren, something many of us might feel. Learn more. Visit the website mngreengraves.com. Give them a call. The goal is so meaningful, so positive, it might be right for you. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens.
Hey Minnesota, Norman Goldman here. The furniture business is one of those industries that's full of fake sales and false discounts. This is the age of the hashtag illegitimate fake president, and haven't you been lied to enough? That's why you need to check out Habitation Furnishing and Design. Habitation offers some of the coolest furniture in Minneapolis at fair prices every day. No fake sales, no phony discounts, just honest, intriguing, and really unique furniture. Check out Habitation on Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park or visit HabitationDesign.com.
Hey, Mike McAtee back with you here on Friday and the week. Got a thought for you. What, the whole big Republican tax cut, and you hear Donald Trump saying, hey, it's doing great things. All these businesses are giving people bonuses and increases in pay. So is that really happening? Is that really happening? Bloomberg has a story here and says, despite the headlines, it turns out that most companies aren't doing much with all their tax savings. This is a survey from Willis Towers Watson. The HR consulting firm asked 333 employers with at least 1,000 employees what they've done or plan to do with the result of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Only 4% of the companies said they had, quote, increased wages for all employees. An additional 3% said they plan to do so in the next year. And further, 13% said they're considering it, but a full 80% of companies aren't considering giving raises at all. That's 80%. And those are the size companies that most people work for. It's hard to tell what the effects will be. The bonus and wage increases provided employees so far have been a fraction of the savings companies are seeing from the tax bill, and it's going to take years to determine what exactly has happened. And I mentioned before the break Nutella. I don't eat Nutella because I believe it or not, I don't like chocolate. But this is crazy. In France, crowds are going nuts this week for Nutella because they gave 70% off of it at some of the stores. A supermarket chain slashed the price of 33-ounce jars on the spread on Thursday, and scenes grew so heated in one store just north of France, the police had to be called. The social media video on this is just amazing. It looks like people, you know, just like bears. If you've seen bears go for Nutella, this is a bunch of bears going after Nutella, and they're all humans. It showed shoppers stamping on each other and shouting as they tried to snag the jars. The discount brought the jars down to about $1.75 each. I mean, this is like, you know, Christmas sales at, you know, Black Friday at Target with people going nuts. Some stores resorted to restricting sales to one jar per person, and they quickly ran out of stock, and they had to turn away customers. Now, you got to understand, Nutella's a big favorite in France. It's using for topping croissants and baguettes, and the product's Italian maker, Ferraro, though, tried to distance itself from this whole unsightly hysteria and said it had nothing to do with the promotion by the supermarket chain Intermarché. The statement from the maker of Nutella, we regret the consequences of this operation. And we're sorry that the offer had created confusion and disappointment in consumers' minds. Nutella, you didn't know that it was that popular. I've mentioned to folks here that I am in Arizona this month, and I just wanted to give you one little perspective here. We talk so much about the Super Bowl. I've been talking to people down here about the Super Bowl. Several people last night have mentioned, we're going to have the Super Bowl in Minneapolis. And they looked at me with a blank face. They said that was news to them. The Super Bowl, it's in Minneapolis. So as you get all puffed up about what's happening with the Super Bowl and thinking the eyes of the world are going to be on Minneapolis, remember that there's a certain segment of the population, at least here in Arizona, and I think other places, that go, Huh? What? Yeah. Bring you down to earth just in time for the weekend. That's it for today's show. We'll be back on Monday. Hey, Mom, thanks for listening. See you later.